Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
We are with another edition of the Chicago Way. Jeff Carlin from WGN AM, the fine producer of the Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis. Me, your humble, small-headed, no egoless columnist from the Chicago Tribune. Yes, syndicated. And later on in the show, we're going to have Kristen McQuarrie from the editorial board, Pat Brady, political consultant, to talk about Tony Taxwinkle, the Duchess who wants us to bend our knee to drink pop, and also, you know, how the Democrats can exist without talking about Donald Trump rather than talking about what's going on in their own world. But first, we have some things to deal with of a personal nature, Jeff Carlin.
Yes, John.
How have you been, man?
I've been well, busy.
Can I tell you that something bothers me about the podcast?
Sure.
There's too much John Cass and not enough Jeff Carlin in it.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I mean it. And I just listened to one, and I'm like, shut up, John. So I'm shutting up.
Well, then it's working. Yeah, John, it's funny you say that, because I wanted to ask you about your tomato crop. Is it a bumper crop this year? I know there was a BLT posted earlier on social media that caught the eye of not only myself, but Christine as well.
Is it odd you can write columns on political philosophy, or, you know, what happens in Venezuela when the toilet paper runs out, yeah, or in the money, Trump and so on. But if you put, or Rahm, little fingers, we'll call him now. Mm-hmm. But you put a picture of a tomato, lettuce, and bacon sandwich. That's the proper order.
Sure.
And all of a sudden you get, like, you know, on the two Facebook pages, there are like 500 likes a piece. How does that work?
I don't know, John. People love food. We know anything.
So do you go, since you're not a big meat eater, do you go for the tomato lettuce cheese sandwich?
Christine and I will do, on occasion, we usually do it in a salad form too, just because it's easier to keep salads around when you need them. But we do turkey bacon on occasion, so mm-hmm. not pork bacon, but right, turkey bacon. But then lettuce, tomato, and avocado, or will be that other piece if we don't have.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Well, the tomato crop, Jeff Carlin and everyone, I want you to know, is outstanding. Betty and I are having our usual fight about the cucumbers because we're being overwhelmed with cucumbers. I'll bring some in for you. She always wants me to plant 4 cucumbers. I always plant 8.
Oh, my God.
And then I have them on the vine. You'll come over to the house. You'll see it. And those of you who have seen the photographs, you know that the cucumbers grow up on the side of the garden on trellises. And then the rest is basically tomatoes and a little hole, a little depression where 4 little rabbits lived once. The rabbits are now gone, and they're at the wild sanctuary where they...
Right. They're better off.
They're better off.
They're in a better place.
Amongst their own kind.
Oh,
without...
orphans or rabbits?
They're orphans because their mother stupidly put a rabbit's nest in Zeus's domain.
Right. Yeah.
And for a couple weeks there, it's a critical time.
Sure.
When the rabbits were there, and then the whole thing went to hell, and Zeus was breaking in every day. Breaking his stubborn German head against the, because he's a German short-haired pointer, against the fence and breaking through to see if there were more rabbits. And I kind of gave up for a while. I just didn't watch the garden at all. Mm. There was plenty of rain. Sure. But you know what happens in that end, that mid, those first 2 weeks of July, if you give up, it goes crazy. So
how so? Like weeds or?
Not weeds, because I've got the landscape fabric in, but okay. They grow, you know, I didn't trim the suckers and I wasn't really tying the tomatoes. So they were kind of stressing, you know, the vines were stressing against the original smaller tomato cages. And so I spent the last few days in the mornings before work, before putting on my proper blazer and slacks and coming to work, spent time out in the garden in my sock shorts and the big floppy hat Betty got me, and tying the tomatoes and listening to our Game of Thrones, like, sub-podcasts that we do.
Our spinoff?
Spinoff. And, Jeff, I wouldn't, you know, I've already burdened you with so much work to do the podcast editing, the great sounds that you put on, and the, now the spinoff, pardon me, of the Game of Thrones podcast, but if you ever want to just come out there and work in the garden, it's really good therapy.
Oh, I bet.
Like you have time, which you don't. But, you know, to sit out there and listen to, you know, myself, I listen to, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
No.
It is. I just wanted to hear how it sounds.
Ben Franklin used to take, you know, air baths to reset himself and, you know, de-stress.
Pardon me?
Ben Franklin. It was a thing, air baths. It was apparently very European at the
time. He was a nudist?
Well, he would go and he had place a chair in a room with big windows, and he would just sit there and essentially meditate nude on a chair.
With any help from some lusty wench or something?
No, really? This was just nude in embracing the nature and the air, and he was, it was, you know, there was around the same time when they thought like diseases were all airborne, and
so he could release the ill humors, as we call them. Would they bleed themselves? That's when they bled themselves.
That was part of it, but that wasn't part of this. But yeah, he definitely would do that as well.
We should do that.
We should, yeah.
We should think of you in the right now, Jeff, a burly fellow, Blackhawk fan, beard, ginger. Built like a linebacker, and myself, rather, once a athlete gone to seed with a chunk of hair on his back, and we're sitting here naked. I don't see it, man.
No,
I have to have a tie on to think, you know. I'm too old school. So the idea is you go out in the garden and chill. Mm-hmm. I don't want to think of anything. You know, I talk to my editors in the morning. What do you think about writing on? What about this? What about that? What about, you know, Democrats talking about Trump all the time? They're not talking about people getting slaughtered in the streets or whatever. We'll talk about that later with Kristen. And I like to sit in the garden with clothes on and my tape, you know. Here she comes. Kristen McQuarrie, right when I'm talking about wearing clothes in my own garden.
That's all I heard, is that you like to garden with clothes on? I hope so.
Yes, I do.
I'm not ready for this.
I
just almost attacked
movie.
A person who was walking down the street with a box of Stan's donuts and two coffees.
And her name
so
was Kristen?
Delicious.
And
no,
she didn't bring
it was
in.
A man. It was a tourist probably heading back to his hotel, to his lava, bringing her. I know. I have all these theories and stories I walk down Michigan Avenue.
Oh, do you pick the stories for people? I do too.
Yes.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
You guys,
I write scripts sometimes in my head. Oftentimes Saturday Night Live scripts. But
as opposed to he's going back to the hotel room where the three bodies are stretched out neatly, their arms folded, and their eyes with mirrors on them.
What you think about. No, but can we just talk for a moment about Stan's Donuts?
Sure.
Because they just opened one around the corner. Have you
Where?
Had them?
Like the last thing I need. I can't even see my shoes with two mirrors.
I know. My pants are tight today. But I never realized I was just eating mediocre donuts until I had a Stan's donut. I mean, it's just like silk in your mouth.
You suck, Kristen.
Wow.
You had to tell me about that?
I'm sorry. It's right around the corner by Labriola. They now go in pairs. They're opening a Stan's donut with a Labriola down the street on Michigan Avenue, too.
Is it better than Do Right's Donuts four blocks away with the great famous chicken sandwich and the buttermilk donut?
Right. I mean, Do Right's kind of has the market cornered on the like large format donuts. I mean, these are big format donuts. The Stan's are good size. But
yes,
I think
they are.
Stan's is kind of even bigger. And so I think they kind of...
Larger dollops of fried fat and sugar?
Right. So
they just, even if you just get a chocolate frosted, the chocolate is not that cheap sugary stuff that you get at other donut places. It tastes like homemade, fudgy, delicious chocolate.
Like big armed German matrons were grating it in their kitchen with the windows wide open, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry. I digress. Should we get back to talking about Ben Franklin and...
And his proclivity?
And his,
no, I have to try the donuts now, and you basically sucked for telling
me that. I'm sorry. I will bring some, and it crossed my mind, and then I thought, well, you know, if I actually have time, I'll run down to Whole Foods and we'll eat fruit, you know, because we're all trying to not eat donuts, but
I can't eat.
You can't eat fruit?
No, because fruit has sugar in it. So, I can't eat donuts, and I can only eat... Big porterhouse steaks from Golden Steer.
Are you on a diet? Are you on a diet?
No, I decided to go on a diet because I'm trying to do like a come back to being an adult at work instead of wearing like polo shirts with the stain on the shelf.
I noticed. Actually, you have lost weight.
No, well, I can't say when the third chin goes away and I get only two, then I'll start talking about it.
So, but you're wearing a suit today just because you're trying to be an adult.
I'm wearing just a jacket.
Oh, are you have shorts on underneath there? I can't see under the table.
I don't go with the shorts underneath.
I didn't think so.
Because we're not even on TV, as you know.
Right.
Not like the other place where you do your radio.
Oh.
When you're on, you know,
they take video.
They do, right? And then they retweet you.
Live stream, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then they retweet you, like Kristen McQuarrie fighting Dan Proft over... SB1.
Oh, that one.
Oh,
yeah.
Where's the other one? Let me tell. Because she is Miss Media, is she not? Showing up everywhere.
I'm trying to tone down. You know, we can only take so much of me.
Why is she so popular? Everyone wants her on their pod. Is it the voice of the angel thing?
That and her wit and her knowledge of donuts.
Mm-hmm. See, that's it. That should be my new Twitter description.
Speaking of donuts, the proper ones carry some sort of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no tax on donuts, is there?
No, not a tax on for our health. I'm outraged.
And if I go down the street, across the street, say I avoid Stan's because I don't want to have 1,000 calories, but I'll have 1,000 calories in my mocha frappuccino, which if you ever see me drinking one, just put two in the back of my head, okay? but say I go there, you know, to the Tribune coffee shop. Where, you know, you see Tribune reporters who don't have deadlines at 3 and at 10.
Mm-hmm.
I don't pay a tax there.
Right. It's very confusing, isn't it?
And then there was an editorial recently in the Chicago Tribune that was quite damning of Toni Taxwinkle, mm-hmm. Saying that she sought revenge against those who would dare fight her on this.
She's just, I mean, I think she's just kind of lost her way. She's doubling down on foolishness, really. I think that's what the editorial said. And it's just, people have described her to me lately as, if you think Rahm is the boss in Chicago, Cook County, you're wrong. That she's taken on, she is the boss in every way. And with this soda tax, I think it has sort of come out. I mean, she got it passed through the county board. People started to reject it.
Yeah.
And then she threatened, you know, when the retailers, the merchants who have to actually deal with all of the bureaucracy of this tax. And if we could just take a minute to think about that, okay. It's a penny per ounce soda tax, but it so it depends on the size of the beverage, the type of beverage. Some beverages are not. Imagine if you, like the Walgreens, they probably have software to deal with that and figure it out. But if you're a small business owner and you have to figure out how to tax a lemonade versus a liter of pop versus this versus that, that's a lot to ask retailers to do and then gather up that tax and send it to the county separate from other taxes. So the retailers fought back. They sued. They won a temporary reprieve. During that temporary reprieve, Toni Preckwinkle fired, you know, sent all these layoff notices. That was her first revenge. You know, well, if we don't have the tax, we're going to have to lay workers off. And so they did. Workers lost their jobs. Then a month later.
Any of her political patronage workers lose
their job? Not that I'm aware
just
of.
Just everybody else's. Got it. Okay, mm-hmm. Toni.
And then when the tax was upheld by the court just a month later, which just recently happened, so now money is going to start rolling into the county. She puts the county lawyers, which taxpayers fund, we're paying for this, to sue the retail merchants who went after the
How
tax.
Dare you. Two questions here. And she and the county upheld, the county courts upheld the tax, the soda tax.
Yes.
The judge, do you know the judge?
I do not.
You don't? Do you know the judge?
I do not.
Why isn't he mentioned? It's just judge. I noticed that the courts mentioned, you know, the courts. That judge, I've known that judge for 30 years. His name's Danny Kubasiak. Okay? Danny used to work for Ed Burke years ago.
No.
He started out as a young lawyer. Very smart, was like chief of staff of the finance committee and moved his way up. I'm not saying that has anything to do because, you know, I don't think Burke and Toni Taxwinkle are on the same page in anything,
mm-hmm.
not even on this universe. But everybody comes here with, in this world of politics, everybody has somebody. And Toni has what? What is her constituency? From the tax we can see, she wants to protect yuppies or whatever they're called, we call them, people who go to Starbucks. So they have money. They have money to go to Starbucks because they have money to pay $5 for a bleeping cup of coffee. And she has, and what's her other constituency? Who else is exempted? People on welfare. How does that work? How do you, so who are you sticking it to? All the, like, the rich don't drink pop. The poor drink pop and working class. So she's sticking it to working class Democrats in her own county.
And small business owners.
And small business owners. How do the link cards, how is that exempt?
I don't know. We've had some great coverage in the Tribune that I should go back and review because I'm not sure how that ended. I don't know that she knew that was going to be the case, at least when she first sold it. When she came in and met with the Tribune editorial board a year ago and the tax was going to be part of the next fiscal year budget, the whole idea was it was a health issue. And she talked about childhood obesity and she talked about, you know, too many kids drinking soda. Well, the data has shown, the fact is that lower income and minority kids are more likely to be drinking these beverages and to be overweight because of them. They don't have as much access to fruits and vegetables. They maybe don't have good eating habits at home based on just generational custom.
How about Democrats and Republicans nationally get huge campaign donations from agribusiness and the sugar people to protect sugary stuff?
Right. That's part of it too. But so her whole idea just it backfired from the beginning. And I think it was the backlash. You know, I write so much about property taxes, mm-hmm. and things that get me really riled up but don't resonate with the average voter. But this has.
Yes.
And I think she's just become really tone deaf to what this is about. It's not about people not wanting to pay taxes. It is about big government sticking its grimy little hand in our pockets for something so simple as a small pleasure of a Diet Coke when we get our gas or the fancy coffees or...
Do you pay for Diet Coke? It has no sugar.
Oh, yeah, that has the soda. That's why it was taken to court, because it makes no sense. There is a tax on no-calorie diet drinks as well.
And a tax, and also if you're an athlete and you drink Gatorade.
Right.
Pedialyte's so, not though, so you're good.
You Pedialyte?
Yeah, you can drink Pedialyte instead.
But what about what if you're a kid?
I thought you meant Cass drinks Pedialyte.
Oh yeah, no, yeah.
Don't worry.
Is that a baby drink?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it good with gin?
I'm sure it is.
It has lots of. It's actually probably not a bad idea.
Yeah. Lemon Pedialyte.
I'm getting so many ideas.
Right. Exactly.
Little vodka in my Pedialyte. Oh.
I was thinking of the Lemonada.
Get you coming and going. It's, you know,
Lemonada, the San Pellegrino. Another
there
one text.
Yeah,
you're right. It is tone deaf. Okay, so what about these constituencies that are protected?
Mm-hmm.
Why did she protect the Starbucks people?
Those are jobs, John.
No, they were jobs that she thinks will go Democratic because they're all a bunch of millennials riding their bleeping bikes up and down Milwaukee Avenue.
Oh, and on the sidewalk.
Oh,
I have to look up to the heavens and say, God.
Those are divvy people.
Yeah.
Give me patience to accept the things I cannot change. And among them, divvy bike riders on the sidewalk.
Oh, the
drinking
worst.
Their frappuccinos.
Careening down the sidewalk on Michigan Avenue when I'm trying to walk or get to work or whatnot. I mean.
There should be a sign when you sign the, or like for tourists, that says, by the way, don't ride this on the sidewalk. Or Lakeshore Drive. That's also bad. I see them on. All the time on Lakeshore Drive.
Lost on Lakeshore Drive. Like they know they can't get off.
Like,
they can't turn.
Yeah, like that deer in the middle of the ice.
Yeah. Yeah, waiting for the pack of wolves to come.
They are lost. They're so lost. They can't figure out how to get back over.
And then they're like terrified and you feel bad for them.
I don't feel bad for them.
I mean, a little bit, but then
just so they shake a little bit.
That's a Muttley laugh. Yeah.
It was.
Amazing. It was, wasn't it?
That's right.
So, okay.
The constituency. So back to
back to the constituency.
But John, Starbucks is a jobs. People make those
right.
Drinks.
But isn't that a Democratic constituency?
Yes.
Elite, because I think anyone spending $5 for a cup of coffee, I mean that's to me insane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not working people. Working people go to what it used to be White Hen for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
If usually they make it themselves. So these people have $5, $6 for coffee and then another and whatever. So they're taken care of. I'm on welfare. I'm taken care of. I don't have to pay the Tony tax. That's what she needs to get elected.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I mean, it doesn't. Otherwise, her whole theory doesn't make sense anyway. We all know it was baloney. And I think that's why it has blown up in her face a little bit. But the fact that Link users are not subject to the tax, it makes no sense. But they would, you're right, that is a base that would notice, it's on the receipts. She would get a lot more pushback from that constituency if link cards were affected.
Also a big constituency, grocers.
Mm-hmm.
Because grocers make a lot of money. It's kind of like a law, like all illegal aliens must have insurance to drive a car in Illinois. Everyone has to have a car in Illinois, insurance. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And illegal alien, I'm sorry, undocumented. What am I supposed to say? Undocumented.
Illegal alien is fine.
Yeah, but I have to be right with the AP style now.
Oh, right.
As we cut out ideas.
Oh, gosh, what is it? It's
workers, immigrants who happen not to have papers or something, or proper documentation.
Yeah.
Right?
Undocumented. Okay.
So, when the law went into effect that you had to have insurance,
mm-hmm.
who did that help? The insurance companies that were marketing to that constituency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how I look at laws often. Who's like really...
Who's benefiting? Who's profiting is what, the better word. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so who profits here?
I mean, the unions are behind the tax, of course, because any time there is more money flowing into Cook County, that means they have a greater chance of getting more generous contracts. So there has been pushback among rank and file people like you and me, but the union leadership was behind the tax. They're behind every tax.
Right.
So whatever, you know, beating that she's taking over this, I'm sure she's letting them know.
You
better stand with me.
And she does talk like a boss.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I used to call her Sensible Shoes, and somebody, a friend of mine who's in our business for a long time, then kind of was in the public area, said, you know what, man? She's not a sensible shoe. She's not some librarian. She's a boss.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The more, that's why I call her Tax Winkle now. Not Grady, whatever the hell that is. Why does Diane call her Grady?
I don't know. I don't know what he means.
Some
I just think she went from...
Like weird sitcom from the 80s that he remembers.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
When she was on the city council and when she first ran for board president, I appreciated the fact that she was really direct, that she kind of got beat up on the council because she wouldn't be a go-along, get-along
person.
She stood
up against Daley.
She stood up against Daley.
Although, who put her in?
Well, true.
It wasn't,
so many people rail against the machine and then become part of it as soon as they get into their seats. And I don't think she did do that. So, and when she ran as a reformer, and I'm using air quotes,
right,
with Stroger, and she was going to clean up county government, I was supportive of that. And I do think she has done a lot more than her predecessors in trying to get the debt-ridden, out-of-control costs of county government somewhat constrained a tiny bit. There's a lot more that she could do
but
that she hasn't.
She humiliated Todd Stroger on getting rid of the 1% sales tax, right?
Yes.
And said he's an idiot, this 1% sales
tax. I'm rolling it back.
This is why you have to, and she went crazy with it, and everyone supported her, and the editorial board supported her because they hated, I'm not just talking about ours, all of them, they hated Todd Stroger because they didn't like Bill Beavers and they didn't like the guys around him. So what do they get? She rolls it back and then applies it again selectively this way.
That's, right. Well, she reinstated it. I mean, right. She had to completely, it was almost like Bush's no new taxes pledge.
Read my lips.
She reinstated it. And then I just think as she has evolved in this role, she's become more of a political player than I think many of us kind of signed up for. The getting behind Kim Fox, the retaliatory positions that she took at times with Anita Alvarez because they, you know, she didn't agree with her policy positions or the
you
way
mean
she
like
was running the office.
People. She didn't like
but so then they would get into budget fights.
Yeah.
And I've just heard too many stories behind the scenes of ways in which she applies political pressure when we are not supposed to collapse those roles. That is why Blagojevich went to prison. I know we all think it was about stealing the Senate seat, but you cannot conflate politics and campaigning with governing. And I have heard stories of her not doing anything illegal, but pressing people on, well, you didn't support me on this issue, so no, I'm not going to help you get this issue for your constituents.
So when
and I don't
gonna,
like that.
Does she have beagles? No, she's divorced, right? She doesn't have Zeus.
I know.
Zeus is
you mean
gone.
Doggies? Does she have
doggies.
Little doggies?
I just wonder if she'll pick them up by the ears like Lyndon Johnson, because she sounds like a Lyndon Johnson Democrat.
Did he pick up his doggies by the ears?
Check it out.
Okay.
But it was an affectionate way to pick them up.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
She would pick up like lesser Democrats by the ears if you didn't support me on that, like you're saying, right?
I mean, right. And maybe I'm being naive in that everybody does that, but I think you have to be careful if somebody doesn't support you in the political arena, campaigning I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and then your retaliation is that you withhold something that would help Cook County residents in that person's district.
This is a responsibility of the media, too, to point these out, to ferret this out, to explain it, and to present it to the people. I find what we're doing now is letting people off the hook by, they say, instead of asking, why are 2,000 people already shot this year? We had 4,000 last year. You're going to break the record. We say, what do you think about Trump? Or, isn't Trump a jerk? Or, are you going to fight Trump? Mr. Belvedere, what's his name? Governor Pritzker.
Mm-hmm.
Or future Governor Pritzker. Are you going to fight Trump? What do you think of Trump? What do you make of all that?
I think it's garbage, personally. And again, I'm always looking for, and probably to a fault, the double standard. But was Pat Quinn constantly asked about what Obama was doing in the White House when he did something controversial? Was he asked to weigh in? What's your position? What do you think of this or that? No, of course not. And I think it's just a total distraction. It has nothing to do with the problems that Illinois faces. But you're right, the media plays along. He gets asked those questions like, well, what about this with Trump? What about that with Trump? And he's been really clear from the beginning, he was not a Trump supporter. So,
oh, Rauner?
Right.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about this in a bit with, I hope you stick around. Can you stick around?
I can't too much.
We're going to talk about this with Pat Brady. I want to talk. Oh, okay. Please, come on.
Well, when?
I'll get you some donuts from
Stan's. Oh, gosh.
What's your favorite?
I'm
going
to
bring them to the editorial board. It's Friday.
Oh.
And
but
I no longer have an office in the editorial board, you know.
No, I know.
I
you did for a while.
For years.
Yeah.
Not that I was on the board itself, because my brain's not big enough to handle these questions. But I almost felt like, I always felt like, and told people, I was the pink flamingo on the broad lawn of the editorial board. And I think I'd like to come back and just bring some Stan's donuts to you.
Okay. I'm in your old office, you know. And when I first...
Your
first one, and you apologized for all the coffee stains on the carpet.
Did you ever finally get those up?
Or? No, they're still there. They're kind of part of the ambiance of the room.
How about
I always
Cheetos,
think about
the ground Cheetos into the carpet?
Yeah. I see all of that, and I, you know, it's osmosis, John Cass.
Aren't you glad I couldn't smoke in there?
Yes, I am, actually.
I would have had cigarettes or cigars in there.
It wasn't that. You probably did get to smoke in offices or in the Tribune when you started, though, right?
When I started, yeah. Everyone had an ashtray on their desk.
Yeah.
And then we had the whiners. I can't believe people actually smoked indoors.
I know. It's crazy.
It's so weird, right?
Now, there are a few things in this world that make me a giggling child. To take me to a simple time when things weren't quite as wild. One of those very special things that does it every time is a donut and a glass of milk. It makes me feel so fine. Everybody loves donuts.
Pat Brady, former chairman of the Republican Party.
Also looking very dapper. You're both in
dapper
suits.
Dapper blue and a night,
you
very
have
nice
summer
suit.
Tans and.
Well, the tie's a clip on.
How you doing? 100%
Rose at Line from Animal House, 100% Rayon. Very nice.
100% Rayon.
Such a liar.
Meet Jagdish, Muhammad, and Lonnie.
All right, so what's your issues?
No issues. I just wanted to get to the discussion because I think I haven't been here in, I don't know, six or 7 weeks.
You've been busy in the mornings.
He's busy working.
Mornings.
But
I
think you need some straightening out. But
we'll straighten her out first, and then I'll watch.
She's a lot smarter than both of us.
Yeah, she is.
No.
All right, so, here's the question.
She's an Ohio State Redbird.
I am.
Fear the bird.
Birds. Yeah.
Okay.
They don't acknowledge me, but it's okay.
That's all right. Columbia College doesn't acknowledge me.
No?
No, because I'm probably the only guy attended there, who wasn't like a commie or a socialist when I got out.
You're the pink flamingo on the lawn of Columbia,
definitely,
too.
Definitely. I think it also has to do, isn't Bill Cellini a big donor? I don't know. Maybe they don't know me there. So, Pat Brady, we're talking about this business of the Democrats, Rahm and Pritzker, basically trying to tie Trump to Rauner and never having to answer questions about their own crapola. Like, the one I want to know is, did Pritzker use union plumbers when he ripped out the stupid toilets?
Well,
in that
my
house
question is, how many toilets do you need to pull? Is two enough, or do you have to pull all five?
I think I saw a picture, and I think it was maybe four. I think there were four commodes. Mm-hmm.
You think he
lined
used
up.
Union plumbers?
I don't know, but...
Well, if history's a judge, no, because they weren't particularly friendly to the unions when they were running their hotels.
That's true.
And they weren't particularly adept when they ran their bank into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Now, he'll say that was his sister's.
Which is what, if you were talking to Blagojevich and you were Pritzker, you would joke about how your sister screwed up the bank.
Yeah,
right?
That's what you do, because there's nobody gets hurt when a bank fails. If you're the rich guy, you just walk away,
right,
and you stick, $400 million in liabilities, and you just walk away and say, wow, I need to go to probably need to go to the islands on the jet.
Right.
You guys,
I'm really stressed out.
Two people that, one group that can't walk away easily are suburban property owners. And how are they going to, because I always got the, I keep hearing, oh, it's going to be, everything's going to be fair. But as a suburbanite now, I got a feeling that suburbanites always end up getting it right in the ear when they're dealing with school funding. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's the battle right now. And that's what the governor keeps fighting for. Even you might read things to the contrary, but I still believe it's a battle between the suburbs and the city on where we're going to bail the Chicago pensions out again. Why don't we just have a separate bill? But more important to me, along those lines, and probably to suburban people, I will pay more when I pay my payments in a couple of weeks, more in property tax this year than I made in my first job out of law school.
Wow.
It's a lot. And I don't mind it so much because my kids' schools are very, very good. So I have less of a beef about it. I don't understand why they have these millions of dollars in reserves for nothing. But the property tax issue probably will be the number one issue in the campaign.
Are you in Cook County?
If you don't mind, I'm in Kane.
You're in Kane. Okay. Yeah.
My wall issue is with DuPage. I want to build the wall between DuPage and Kane.
You want to keep them
DuPage
out?
DuPage pay for it. I saw Dan Cronin the other day. I said, I'm going to build the wall in the Fox River.
Yeah, I think
and
Wisconsin.
You're paying for it.
I think Wisconsin is about to do that, too. There was some talk with the whole Foxconn issue coming. They collected a bunch of testimony recently about how the whole package is going to work out. And Wisconsin lawmakers were actually nervous about the idea of Illinoisans coming and taking those jobs. I think they might write something into legislation to make sure that Foxconn only hires people from Wisconsin. So see, we can't even be refugees in our neighboring state. Nobody wants us.
Yeah. You know,
we're stuck on this side of the cheddar curtain.
We are.
That way, I would say.
Steve Grzanich had a guy on yesterday on his show in the morning, a chairman or a political director for the Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce. And he asked him rightfully, how did you attract this 13,000 jobs and 20,000 square feet of office space or industrial space, plus a chance to get some in Wisconsin? And his answer could have come from Governor Rauner's talking points. Well, what we did is we instituted business-friendly reforms in our state, like tort reform, keeping our taxes low. Workers' comp reform. All the things the governor talks about that happened in 2010, 2011, 2012 with Governor Walker now come to fruition because this company will actually want to go there. And I love Wisconsin, but if you had a choice in that we were both equal with Wisconsin, would you come here to a city of Chicago with the major airport, all
of
everything, or would you go to Wisconsin? No, you'd come here.
Well, I think
your executives want to come here, and your workers want to come here.
And they said that too. They said, well, we're going here because it's close to O'Hare and it's close to Chicago. And I'm thinking, well, Chicago's close to Chicago. I mean, so
they get closer to Gene and Jude's and you can have it make everybody happy.
What we need, though, is the Democrats will say Indiana also was bidding and Indiana didn't get it, that it had more to do with the politics of Paul Ryan and the administration maybe helping along him getting this big win for his district. But
what would Paul Ryan have to do with it?
I think when you represent a district, you still have to be responsive to your constituents.
No, absolutely, but the incentives come from the state.
That's
And if you're not in the position because you manage your household well to make these kind of inducements and offers. Like Governor Thompson in 83 or 84 brought Mitsubishi to my hometown in ISU because we were a healthy state then. He recognized the deal needed to be made, and he made the deal. A lot of people didn't like it because of some of the incentives it included. But you know, it saved Bloomington Normal and created a ton of jobs and kept a lot of people there. So if you're not – it's common sense household financial management. If you don't save, you can't buy a car.
Here's the problem with all that you're saying. You need Rauner. Wisconsin had all these issues done, reforms, business reforms, workers' comp, et cetera. Rauner has capitulated on 44-0. He came with a list when he first was elected. I have 44 things we got to do. He gave in on every one, and now I hear people saying, "Oh, and on the schools now because we're going to have the crisis point and the typical Democratic game of chicken." That he should capitulate on this too. If he does, both of you, if he does, and Jeff Carlin too, if he does he get reelected?
I don't think he's capitulated on the school funding issue, and I support Senate Bill 1. I mean, he vetoed it. I think they're going to try to override him. So if he gets overridden on that, like he did with the tax, he's in trouble. I think he's been in trouble for 18 months. You know, you can't run for re-election constantly blaming everything on Speaker Madigan. You can't. And I agree that he's a huge problem, but you are the governor and you wear the jacket no matter what. That's kind of my bottom line.
Pat?
I don't think we've had this discussion before, but right, he ran the 44 things. Some of the things weren't going to get done. They're still on his agenda, but mm-hmm. he did. He vetoed Senate Bill 1. He vetoed the tax increase, and I don't think there are the votes in the House to override the veto. So we're going to be back to the bargaining table because the Democrats slipped that provision in that you can't appropriate the money unless you have a spending bill. So now we're going to be back to square one. Do I think he can win? Yeah, because I think a lot of people are really fed up and recognize that it takes some time and change is difficult. Will it be hard? Yeah. But you can't beat somebody with nobody. And I don't see what the Democrats are putting up right now or what their solutions are. And you could probably say this on the national level. Why would Joe the Welder, who voted for Trump or maybe wanted to support Rauner, turn around now and vote for Mike Madigan's handpicked successor or, you know, whoever the Democrats are going to put up next locally or nationally? So who are the what's the alternative?
I think that whoever emerges from the Democratic primary will do his best to distance himself from Madigan. And I think, I mean, Rauner didn't win by that much. He only won
five
by
points.
A couple of
no,
percent.
No, he won by 5 percentage points, which in Illinois for a Republican is a huge
oh,
win.
I thought it was shorter. I thought
no,
it was only 2.
4.9.
I just think he's losing that middle.
4.9624.
Oh.
I love
take
this.
Easy,
wow.
I love this between them
love
because
it.
They're
Ding.
Polite and they love each
they
other,
are.
But they're still the friends right. are out between
it's
them.
Good.
Just so you know.
I think he's losing the middle. The people who traditionally voted Democratic in the suburbs and in the collar counties who were willing to kind of take a chance and go with his shakeup Springfield. And I just don't think voters pay close enough attention to the day in and day out that you and I do. And so they're going to believe the Democrats' message that he vetoed funding for autistic kids, that the state has gotten a lot worse financially under his watch. I think their messaging is better. He vetoed school funding reform. You guys like that. But I think there are a lot of people who on a mailer or in a commercial are going to see that they think that he, you know, was trying to punish school kids by vetoing that bill.
But here's what plays better statewide. We saved you from big, bad, black hole Chicago. We're not going to bail out Chicago again. I think the funding itself, because these schools are going to open. One of my friends is in the state house, was in a meeting with all these superintendents last week, and he asked a question, who's not going to open if we don't get this done? Nobody raised their hand. So schools are going to open. I'm not saying it's not bad.
Do they stay open?
Well, past October 10th. I think that's the next cutoff date for the payments.
Yeah, I think it depends on the district, but I think there have been some that have said I can get through my first, you know, 2 payrolls, and then I'm going to be in trouble.
Right.
But yeah,
so. I agree with you. It's a critical issue. If your kids aren't going to school, that's bad, and the governor probably will wear the jacket for it. But the notion that he's out of it or he can't win, I think is wrong. Plus, we have the Republicans for the first time, the best campaign operation probably in the country, and the Democrats really don't. So. And he won because he won suburban women. That kind of banana around the county or the city where Mark Kirk used to win, he won all those votes. So I'm not sure if they're ready to abandon him for what, J.B. Pritzker?
I think that would probably be an easier matchup for him. But
sure.
If somebody like a Chris Kennedy were able to carve out a win, I think that would be tougher.
And Chris Kennedy's platform is right now, and I agree with you on that, we're going to raise your taxes again. We want more money taken from you. We're not going to do anything about it. Although he does speak a good game on property tax reform, I think it's more commercial. It's not on the stuff that hits
no.
home with
He's
what I deal with.
The only Democrat that I've heard that said the obvious, which is it's really if you need revenue, it's really hard to get it when the people believe that the Democratic bosses are corrupt, basically, right? When the property tax system is corrupt.
He watched this too, and this is what happened in 2011, and the big tax increase. The people I talked to on the other side, well, we needed it, and blah, 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 it was the right thing to do. We're going to get these bills paid. Well, they didn't pay the bills. They
right.
paid pension payments.
Right.
And what are they paying right now? It'll be interesting to see where these payments actually go. They have to borrow money, $6 billion, I think they can get out of the plan. But is this ever really going to get paid back, or are we just going to continue to make pension payments?
The thing that I'd like both of you to answer is can Rauner make an effective case on this politically in the sense, okay, it's a bailout, it's not a bailout. The Tribune editorial board says it's not a bailout. Is that?
No, SB1
position?
Is not a bailout. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so others say it is, I say it is, Pat says it is. When does Rauner bring in, hey, Chicago has billions or how many hundreds of millions in TIF money that's held aside to protect the downtown business owners and landowners, and the suburbs have to end up paying more while you've got all this money down here and you're not even using it? When do they make that? Or can Republicans make that argument, since a lot of these Mike Madigan clients benefiting from the TIFs are Republican?
Two quick things.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry. I've been kind of...
Oh, no, not at all. No, he nice. Did go after Ooh, that.
John's looking
I know.
Be nice.
It was so okay. nice. He did go... that is one of the things he stripped out in SB1, was allowing districts to underreport how much money they have in TIFs. The kind of sticking point for him there is that lots of communities have TIFs. Rockford, Decatur, they're all over the state. Yeah. So it's not just Chicago that is going to be hurt by him taking that out of the formula. It's all districts who cannot claim, they don't have access to that money. So that's one thing. The other thing is, this is just an example of where I think the governor has difficulty. So he comes out with his veto on Tuesday. We've known this is coming. He's been talking about it for 2 months and actually the whole last year, that he won't accept something that he considers to be a bailout. His people do not have at the ready a district by district breakdown, numbers to support what he's saying, showing here's how my bill will reduce payments to Chicago and help suburban districts, and here's the proof. Still nothing. They really have not even given any sort of a full-throated defense. So what happens now? The Democrats, for 4 days, they got their own numbers. They look terrible for downstate communities and for the city of Chicago. They've got their messaging out. They've got protesters. I already got a mailer from Stand for Children, one of these groups, going after the governor for this veto. I feel like he's continually caught off guard. And he had so much time to prepare for this. And
you're missing
still,
something.
It's days you're later. What am I missing?
You're missing that.
I can't disagree with any of that.
No, you can't. Yeah. Of course not. But one thing you're missing, I think, maybe I'm wrong. All this happened at a time when he made significant changes in his staff, his press operations, that business of reaching out from the government side, not from the political side. And I'm hearing that there's a lot of sabotage going on, a lot of hurt feelings from people who left, and people, you know, and I think that may have, no?
No.
That's not an excuse.
No. Because
the sabotage wouldn't explain the no preparation. I get there probably is sabotage, but they're not like having, you stand up and go, this is what I'm talking about. And the politically easy, before we get into tiffs and things that make people dead spin,
right. Yeah.
Chicago's taking our money again. I mean, I grew up downstate and live in the burbs. If you can flip it, this is Chicago ripping us off again. It works. You don't need any explanation because people understand that.
But is it true?
Well, we're in politics, if you want to talk.
See, I think I looked at I looked at all of the numbers that SB1 so SB1 and then the original and then how the amendment changed it when they added all the money for Chicago schools. And I think even those downstate districts that hate Chicago, they see that they will benefit Mattoon, Effingham, places where they have no property wealth, and so they're torn about his veto.
Here's another thing, though. With all that being said, and this is Leader Durkin's quote from yesterday. We had him on. The worst kept secret in Springfield is Speaker Madigan's been drafting his own bill the whole time, and this thing's going to get dropped right at the 0 hour, like it always does. And we don't know what's going to be in that. Certainly, whatever's favorable to him.
Mm-hmm.
So the debate we're having here may be not relevant because the big guy.
So that'll be the and then what? Any time to negotiate on that one?
No, because he'll drop it at 0 hour. It'll be just like he does with the budgets and just like he did in the last session.
They have 15, they have 15 days.
Night King.
15 days since the Senate registered their veto. Then it goes to the House, and the House has 15 days. And by then, we've blown past this August 10th deadline when schools are waiting. So, yeah, this is not going to be resolved anytime soon. But to your point earlier, Pat, they created this, the Democratic General Assembly, by attaching all school funding for the year to this reform package.
Sure.
They did that. So if schools...
This issue's been around for 4 years. Why do we bring it up now? It's all about politics. It has nothing really to do with sound public policy. They know this issue, if you get it to a crisis like they're going to take it to, is right. Bad for the governor. This could have been done 3-4 years ago. This bill
is not
new.
Oh, it could have been done 15 years ago.
But
when
even
they had
recently,
the governor's
he could have done it this years ago, like whatever. But now the speaker who controls the agenda has chosen to do it now, right in the middle of what's going
to
be.
So does he have the media? Does Mike Madigan, for all the, I'm the white, you know, he's the white walker, he's like the evil creature of Game of Thrones, he's all that, he's the bad guy. But does he have the media, Pat Brady? I know he doesn't have the Tribune editorial board. He doesn't have that, but outside of that.
The speaker?
Yeah.
Does he have media on his side?
Does he? Because I keep hearing, why doesn't Rauner just give in? I mean, I hear that. I heard people talking about that. I'm not criticizing any journalists who might think that way. I'm just wondering, it seems like that's a construction that feeds right into Madigan's lap and gives him even more leverage.
I agree. Why give in if, boy, do the exercise? I don't want to see him give in. I want to see people treated fairly, but I don't want to see him give in.
I just see the media in general being just tougher on Rauner than they are on Madigan. You know, if Madigan or someone else, you know, Rauner during this press conference made a mistake, and actually it's still up for debate whether or not it needs a simple majority or a three-fifths majority to be overridden, the schools bill. And he was really ridiculed in the media for making that mistake. And the Constitution isn't clear. It depends on how you do your mandatory veto, whether or not you need a simple majority or three-fifths or the effective date of the bill and all of that. So I just don't think if Pat Quinn or somebody else who kind of everybody was a little more cushy toward, that wouldn't have been the headline. But it was with Rauner. It was the whole story. Nobody even really covered the fact that, or it certainly wasn't the lead, that he's agreeing, even in the veto, to pick up Chicago pension costs going forward, just in a separate bill. So he's saying this huge debate that has been happening with CPS where they want the state to make its annual normal accruing cost of pensions. He's willing to do that, but that didn't really get that much coverage.
You know, I think, though, if they start arguing we're not being treated fairly by the media, it's a big fat loser. It's a whiny argument. I hate it when anybody makes it. If you are, then deal with it.
I'm whining?
No, but...
Oh, you just started it now, right at the end of the show.
No, I say whining.
Oh, let's go, dude.
No, I said whining about if the...
Come on, my man.
If the candidate or the election...
Southside. Starts whining.
The candidate in the campaign, because...
I didn't mean you. I meant the candidate and campaign start whining. It's a whiny argument. It doesn't work.
You're just so good. Pat Brady, Christian McQuarrie, Jeff Carlin, John Cass. Keep your pants on, everybody. It's going to be a long fight, but one thing I'm just going to say at the end. If you don't fight, either you win or you die. This is where we are in Illinois. This is where we are right now. So you're going to be fighting for your homes or not. And that's how it works. Another edition of the Chicago Way. See you later.